Mace Finnegan and Donick 102.5, the game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you on a Friday. I hope everybody is having a wonderful day, and the weekend is almost here. The Tennessee Titans are back on the field against the Atlanta Falcons. That game starts at 6 o'clock. So, hey, how about a nice three-hour pregame show here on 102.5 The Game?
And that is what this is today.
That is what this is today.
And
so we'll take you right up to kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
I have also just I'm just taking over. Mm-hmm. I am taking over the DJ duties today.
Ooh.
I've submitted
we saw
the playlist.
Some of your playlists.
Oh, you already got a sneak peek?
Yeah, we got a sneak peek of the playlist. I like the first one you sent.
Was it Cutting Edge?
That's
my goal.
Yeah.
I want people out there to say, you know, that Willie, he's on the cutting edge.
See, that's
he's not
what
playing last year's tunes. He's not playing the tunes you hear all over the place. He's going deep in the library, pulling out songs that hit the mood.
He's
for
going
a Friday.
Deep in his bag.
Yeah,
we're
see,
deep
this
in the bag.
This is something that, you know, many don't know about Willie. He's cutting edge. He's been cutting edge for some years now.
At least we hope.
Yeah. So we hope
maybe
that he's cutting edge. Yeah. So, but hey, listen. We're going to have fun. But last night, because yesterday we talked about, you know, the PSLs, or yesterday or the day before, but we've had a long conversation.
That was Tuesday.
And we've talked about PSLs, and we're going to continue to talk about the Titans in their new stadium as the process continues. But when I'm talking with people, especially like at restaurants, I like to ask them, especially if they get to talking about sports, football, Titans more in particular, and, you know, if they say they've been, you know, fans and season ticket holders, the minute they say, you know, I'm a season ticket holder, the first thing I think is, so tell me about your experience. That's all I want to know, about your experience. And last night was no different. So a buddy of mine, good friend of mine, Gerard, we went to a little establishment around the corner from my house, sort of like Cheers, you know. It's walkable if I wanted to walk to it. But I drove around my house, met my homeboy there, to have a few drinks, you know, some libations. Is that what you call it? Yeah, libations.
Libations.
Yeah, there we go. So we're in there eating and drinking a little bit. So there was this, there wasn't a couple, but it was like friends, you know, and Mike and Monica. And Mike was talking about, you know, him being a season ticket holder, him loving, you know, the Titans, and he's been a longtime fan. So I said, well, how was your experience at the, what do they call it, the Titan House? And he said, you know what, the actual experience when they bring you in, and my good friend Gerard, he's been through the process because he's a ticket holder as well. He said the actual process, like going in, seeing everything, he said that was great. Because it's like you are showing them, you know, all the bells and whistles and how it would look if they were, you know, watching the game from this vantage point, how the field would look and the, you know, concessions and everything else. He said that part was great. He said, but there was a sticker shock, a huge sticker shock. And I don't know where he got his seats. He ended up, you know, buying, you know, giving the PSL money. And I'm not going to, it was a lot. I'm not going to sit here and give a dollar amount, but it was a lot for his PSLs. But he said he was, you know, the sticker, if there was a sticker shot, he said he was fine with going in, you know, sort of the introduction to, you know, the seats and everything else. He was cool with that. That was great. They did a good job. But he said once he heard the tickets, he was like, woo. All right, then. Let me, I guess you had to think about that. And my good friend Gerard was the same way. He was like, man, I got to think about this. And I think both of them end up doing what they needed to do to get their tickets for the new stadium. But I think it's going to be either one or two things. Now, some people you're going to have that are just going to be fine with it, you know. And typically, you know, no matter how high the price is, you know, some fans will find a way to pay for it, or they'll find some way to still be in a building. But I think this is what the Titans are going to have to get over, the sticker shock. We had a caller yesterday or a Tuesday that went through his whole process and moving from one point, well, can I buy some tickets over here? Can I? No, I want over there. No, how about that? That's the problem. That's the issue the Titans are going to run into. Not that they are not rolling it out the red carpet. Not that, you know, what they're not showing you isn't going to be great, because that stadium is going to change Nashville forever. It will. No more. We will not be seen as a smaller market team city once they build that new stadium, because then everything comes here now. But that's what they're going to have to get over, the sticker shock. You know, their fans, you know, either you're going to pay for the tickets in the PSL, either you're going to pay for the PSL or you're going to have to wait until they sell individual tickets for games. So, I mean, they will sell that place out, I believe, when those doors open. I think whoever the Titans are playing, and even if they're a bad team, I think that first game it's going to be sold out because everybody's going to want to be in the new stadium. But outside of that, if you don't start winning, yeah, that building looks nice, but when you start telling people they got to pay, you know, two times what they paid or three times what they paid for their last PSLs, that's where you're going to run into the problem.
Those are 2027 problems?
Yes. Yes.
Let's talk 2025. Mm-hmm. So Titans fans, I know that, well, I would assume that you're excited about the season. It may not go well, but we're always excited about the start of the football season. But I'm here to tell you that you don't have to watch any of the football games this season, because Sports Illustrated, Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated, went team by team and predicted the results of every team's schedule. And I'm not just talking about total wins, total losses. He went through every team's schedule and picked the specific games that each team is going to win and each team is going to lose. So I can tell you right now which games the Tennessee Titans are going to win, at least according to Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated. By the way, he has the Titans going 4-13.
That's improvement.
I saw it, yeah.
That's improvement.
4-13.
What'd they win? Two games last year?
Three.
Three?
You know, so, I had to laugh. I watched last week Channel 2. I was preparing to watch the game, and about an hour and a half before the game, Channel 2 aired the NFL Films, which every team does every year, the yearbook, the 2024 Titans half-hour highlight film from last year.
Wasn't many highlights, huh?
And it was 28 minutes,
yes,
of commercials.
Exactly.
It wasn't quite that. But let me tell you, they showed a lot of highlights from the three games that they won.
I'm sure they did.
I would say the three games that they won constituted about 18 of the 24 minutes of on-air footage.
Oh, wow.
It was quite creative how they tried to do that. And they really didn't mention Will Levis a whole lot.
I'm sure they did.
I would sympathize with any producer that's like, hey, Adam, put together the highlights from this 3-14 team and do your best.
It would just say scene missing for 30 minutes.
They showed like the first couple drives of the Bears game and the first opening.
Then what
game
happened?
And then they didn't really show what happened in the second half.
All right.
And they kind of skipped ahead. After an 0-3 start, they went to Miami. And then there was great highlights from the Dolphins game.
Not many.
There weren't many highlights in that game either.
But there were just there was a win. There was a celebration at the end of the game.
Yes. So Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated has the Titans going 4-13. So let's break this down into sections. Orr has the Titans starting the season 0-4. He has the Titans losing at Denver, at home to the Rams, home to the Colts, and at Houston. So he has the Titans starting at 0-4. But hey, the Titans get their first win of the season, week 5 at Arizona. They're 1-4. Then the Titans lose four more, including the game a lot of you have circled. He has the Titans losing at home to Mike Vrabel and the New England Patriots in week 7. So he has the Titans going into the bye week in week 10 with a 1-8 record. The other three wins on the schedule: Week 12 at home against the Seahawks, Week 16 at home against the Chiefs, which is interesting, and Week 17 at home against the Saints. So Connor Orr has the Titans going 4-13, starting 0-4 and 1-8, but winning two of their final three games to finish the season 4-13.
That might cost them the first pick if they win two of the last three. Kind of what may, the opposite of what happened last year.
May mess up this season.
Here's what he wrote about the Titans. Quote, I had the Commanders at 5 wins a year ago, and I imagine I could look similarly ridiculous if Cam Ward takes off for the Titans. Las Vegas has Tennessee sitting at 6.5 wins, which to me is a tremendous display of confidence, not only in the number one pick, but in second-year head coach Brian Callahan. The team opens the season with a cross-country road trip at Denver in the heat and elevation before getting the Rams, Colts, and a road game against the Texans. While you could argue that the Colts game is winnable, it's definitely a coin flip at best. I tried to show improvement by Ward in giving Tennessee 2 wins over the final 3 weeks of the season against New Orleans and a stunner against, yes, the mighty Chiefs. So again, 4-13, starting 0-4, first win of the season, week 5 at Arizona, 1-4. 4 consecutive losses after that, 1-8 going into the bye. So I was thinking to myself, I can only imagine the types of conversations we would be having if this is actually what plays out. How would we be discussing the Titans? What would we be discussing if they start 0-4, other than firing Brian Callahan and looking ahead to the draft? What happens if they lose to Mike Vrabel at home against the Patriots and fall to 1-6.
See, I can just sense the glee right now in your voice, Adam, because you love chaos.
Yes,
and I do.
I mean, you're just kind of looking ahead and saying, "Ooh, the chaos that we can
have. This is gonna be tantalizing.
If Connor Orr is right, this could be chaos." You're enthusiastic about this, but that obviously would be the central. Could Brian Callahan survive an 0-4, 1-6 kind of thing?
Yes.
And I will stand by, I think if that chaos does unfold, I will stand by it, unless it's just, you know, they can't put one foot in front of the other and they're doing worse than they did last year in the pre-snap penalties and things like that. I will stand by that they should stick with the continuity. They should ride out the storm, even if they struggle. That's how I sit today, August 15th, when they're in the fire, in the midst of the chaos. Remember, I'm going to stick with that thought. I do think that it's not my thought going into the year. They're not going to struggle because of the coaches. They're going to struggle because they don't have enough players. So if that's true August 15th, it's going to be true October 15th.
One texter already says on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, if the Titans lose to the Patriots and go 1-8, then Callahan will be fired during the bye week.
I mean, I understand that, you know, the schedule looks daunting, at least the first 4 games, because you're going up against a team that, you know, last year, they end up going to the playoffs, and nobody thought that they would. Their quarterback played, you know, pretty good, and their defense was the best in the NFL. But I think people look at it from this standpoint. They have, just like, you know, Denver has a long time to prepare for the Titans, the Titans have just as equally or even more time. And what I mean by that is that they got film on their quarterback. They got a lot of film on their quarterback. They got a lot of film on what he likes to do, what he doesn't like to do, his tendencies. You know who they have very little film of? Cam Ward. Very little film of Cam Ward. And I know many of you are probably sitting back thinking like, that don't matter. Yeah, it does matter. It does. Because it can almost be like the unknown could be in this situation detrimental to Denver, in a sense. And the weather ain't gonna matter. I mean, the altitude is, but when you talk about heat, I would hate to be in this heat than the heat in Colorado up in the mountains. And, you know, but the altitude is real. But don't just look at that first game as, oh, they're just losing, because there have been plenty of times where, even with the Titans, that opening game, oh, they're gonna lose, they end up winning. And it may not have as much to do with how good they are. It may just have to do with, you don't have enough tape on me as a defensive coordinator. Yeah, you have tape on the scheme, but you don't know what this quarterback likes doing. You don't know his tendencies.
Now, how much does that matter when the defense that the Titans will be facing in week one arguably is the best defense in the NFL?
We've seen it before. They've seen it before. They've seen it. This defense, this offense, they've seen that. They've seen it. They've seen their players. They know what their player's about. They know who to X, who's the primary guy in defense. Obviously, it's Surtain. Is it Surtain?
Yes.
Yes, Surtain. He's their number one guy. He's the reigning defensive player of the year.
Penalized defensive back.
And there's also the most penalized defensive back.
There's also Nick Bonito, not to be confused with Nick Bonino.
I learned that last year. I was like, Nick Bonino. Oh no, Bonito.
Bonito.
Yes,
but listen,
Bonito.
And I'm not saying that, you know, that defense isn't good. They are. But you know, walk into that first game, and I'm just telling you because I'm telling you from experience. Let's just say that. I'm telling you from experience. That first game, sometimes it may work out better for the team that people think are not as good.
I agree. Especially
when you have a new quarterback, and they're going to try to do some things different this year, I think, offensively. If Denver's not ready to play on defense, I'm not even thinking about their offense because you got a lot of film on him. Just like you want to blitz and do everything to Cam Ward, they're going to do the same exact thing to Bo Nix see how he handles it.
Derek is calling for the upset right now on August 15th. They're going to win.
No, I'm calling for it.
It would be nice for the coaching staff to get a little something in the tank on the win column early, whether it's that game or not. I do agree with you on everybody. They will be a big – last I looked, it's already almost a touchdown – favored for Denver. Denver's record the last 5 years, 5-11, 7-10, 5-12, 8-9, and then last year 10-7. So there's a lot of hype for Denver, and they do have a really good defense, but they haven't been a juggernaut, and they're going to be a heavy favorite. I do think it's not a bad place to go as the underdog when nobody will expect them to do anything but get blown out.
The Broncos are 8-point favorites.
It's up to 8 now?
Yes, Denver minus 8, according to ESPN.
That is one of the bigger lines you will find, and this isn't the defending Super Bowl champs with John Elway and Ed McCaffrey and Terrell Davis.
No.
Quickly, let's go to Jared in Spring Hill on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Jared, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I want to share my logic going into this season, and then I got a question for how to approach the Titans. But I'm subscribing to the logic right now. It seems like they're pretty self-aware, and we know what some of these older receivers are. I'm kind of leaning more because to giving more run, and especially when it comes to roster cutdown, keeping some of the younger receivers over like a Jefferson and some of the other guys. We know what they are, but we really need young guys. Like, I'm more almost to that point to where I would rather see all the receivers that we drafted and unsigned, and we signed the young guys, the rookies, carry most of the weight this season, because if you know, you don't want to mislead yourself, and we really do need to start developing some young athletes, and that's really the only way they're going to develop is get playing time. And I'd rather give them playing time than Van Jefferson and even a Lockett. No offense to Lockett, but he's making too much money to not play. Also, how do you think that the Broncos are going to try to defend and shut down the Titans? And then what counter are they going to be able to pull out of the bag whenever that initial defense starts shutting down what they want to do?
Thank you, man.
Have a great weekend. Stay cool this weekend also. Tighten up.
Thank you for the call, Jared.
I think we can save the game plan until the week of the game.
Yes.
We've still got a little ways to figure that out.
Jared, do me a favor. Call back in 3 weeks and ask the same
exact question. Same exact question.
Same exact question.
I would say that that will be a theme. If they get off to a slow start, especially, you will start to hear, hey, why not play the young guys, right? Mm-hmm. I think that will absolutely be a theme.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Connor Orff, Sports Illustrated, predicted the results of every game for every team. He has the Titans going 4-13, starting 0-4, and going into the bye week 1-8. The one win at Arizona in week 5, that means, yes, losing to Mike Vrabel and the Patriots at home in week 7. Your thoughts on that, and what kind of crazy conversations will we be having if this actually turns out to be true? 615-737-1025. Coming up next, yesterday, Willie made a prediction during our State the Case segment about a specific position group on the Titans, and we are going to dig deeper into that Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Later today on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, the Nashville Sounds take on Durham. First pitch is at 5:35. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure.
The offensive line should be way better than it was a year ago. It was a complete dumpster fire last year. And so getting Dan Moore, getting J.C. Latham, who lost like 30 or 40 pounds, lost an enormous amount of weight, allowing him to move back over to right tackle, bringing in Kevin Zeitler, who isn't all pro anymore, but is, you know, is a guy who's played, I think, 14 years in the league now, 15 years in the league. It's not going to be one of the best offensive lines in football, but it's a professional offensive line, which I think is probably you could have said last year. So, like, now it's just about, like, how can they make it easier on him and make sure that it's like, hey, we just want you to go out there and play quarterback. Right. Like, don't like the spectacular highlight stuff. We know you've got it and it'll come, but we want to make sure we're coaching into you to make the routine play. And I think there's that tendency with some of these guys, you know, again, because they're so capable of it, because they could get away with so much in college, to constantly want to make the highlight play. And they're trying to teach Cam, like, you don't have to do that all the time.
That was Albert Breer and Connor Orr on the MMQB podcast, talking about the Titans' offensive line. By the way, speaking of Connor Orr, in the first segment, we mentioned that Orr predicted the Titans are going to go 4-13. They are going to start 0-4, win Week 5 against the Cardinals, then lose four more games before the bye, including the game against Mike Vrabel, to go into the bye Week 1-8. One texter says, if we lose to Vrabel, Callahan will be fired directly into the sun.
Wow.
Another texter says, even if they start 1-8, what gain is there in firing the coach? There's just not very many good players on the team. Firing the coach during the bye week won't fix the roster. They can fire him after the season. Another texter says, now hold up. Everyone said the reason we lost all of the games last year was Levis's fault. We have a new quarterback and got rid of one of the worst offensive lines in history, and they are saying we are going to win one more game than last year? Coach has to go. So just a sampling. Hopefully it doesn't play out that way, but we'll get back to that. So let's play some word association. I'm gonna say a word or a name, and I want the two of you to say the first thing that comes to your mind, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Andre Dillard.
Trash.
Disaster.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said it like that. I'm so sorry.
That's so rude.
God, that was so rude.
He's a human being.
Exactly. You're right, David.
I believe I just saw that he has a family.
And I'm being dead serious. Inadequate.
I believe I just saw.
Let's say that. Inadequate.
That Andre Dillard ended up on season-ending injured reserve, I want to say, with the 49ers.
Well, it's good for the 49ers.
But this is the point of word association, Derek. You are supposed to say the first word that comes to mind.
No, so I said inadequate.
No, you said trash. Let the record show you said trash.
The audio.
All right. Next, Aaron Brewer.
Undersized.
Inept.
Nicholas Petit Frere.
Gambler.
And not in the Kenny Rogers way.
Right.
Not a starter.
Okay. Well, that's three words, not one. Unless you're putting hyphens.
Non-starter, non-starter.
Non-starter. Yeah.
Okay. Well, guess what? None of them play for the Tennessee Titans anymore.
Good.
So the Tennessee Titans have, according to Albert Breer, the makings of a quote-unquote professional offensive line. Will, you brought this up yesterday. And we know that the Titans' offensive line did not perform well last year. Pro Football Focus gave the Titans a grade that ranked tied for 25th in pass blocking last season and a grade in run blocking that ranked 31st in the NFL last season. So we know that the Tennessee Titans...
The fact that they had the pass blocking rated higher than the run blocking ought to tell you something based on the number of sacks they gave up.
Well, the thing about the sacks is Will Levis, also according to Pro Football Focus, 30.4% of the pressures on Will Levis turned into sacks. 30.4%.
That's a high number.
So not having Will Levis under center should...
That will lower the sacks. As we've talked about a lot,
yes.
Mason Rudolph, when he was playing quarterback, which was a significant amount of the time last year, he did not get sacked nearly as much. So the quarterback has a ton to do with the number of sacks. But that aside, it was still not a good offensive line, nowhere close to it. As Albert Breer just said, dumpster fire.
Dumpster fire, which is probably worse than trash because it's trash that's on fire, right?
I think that's accurate. Yeah. In fact, in East Nashville, I don't even want to say it.
Yeah, don't even say it.
Somebody lit.
You
one
live
of,
in East Nashville.
A couple
don't
people
even say
got
it.
Lit their dumpsters, for not real? Dumpsters, but their little containers.
Trash cans?
It was the receptacle for the recycling.
Oh wow!
Somebody, some yo-yo, just came through and lit a couple of them on fire.
We're watching you.
Had to get the fire trucks out.
East Nashville is watching you. We'll catch you.
We're going to find you.
Yes.
We're going to find you.
Willie and I live on that side of town.
Yeah.
We will find you.
We know people.
just like Chippendale Rescue Rangers. The offensive line. Albert Breer calls it professional. When you hear that, when you hear someone describe the offensive line as professional, what comes to mind? The fact that Andre Dillard and Aaron Brewer and Nicholas Petitfrere aren't on it anymore, and they actually have capable offensive linemen?
I think, number one, you are putting people out there in a spot where they have a chance to succeed. I think there's no question that the common theme of those guys, right? Aaron Brewer was a nice backup and a very good, scrappy guy that you could plug in there when needed at guard or center. But as a full-time, everyday center, that was not a strength for him. Andre Dillard obviously was a bargain attempt at a second chance for a first-round pick, thinking you could get something out of it for a low price, and it was obviously a disaster. And then, you know, Petitfrere, just not cut out to be starters. I think the five guys that they have starting this year are starters, right? Mm-hmm. Skoronski and Latham, you hope, are going to take another step. They're both very, very young, but they've already been starters. Cushenberry is a starter in the league. Zeitler is a starter in the league, has been for over a decade. And we know Dan Moore is an overpaid, but a starter in the league. And you will hear this all year long. Well, Dan Moore, they paid him all that money. He's going to look bad sometimes. Most tackles do. And they know they overpaid him. But he is a starter in the league, which puts him light years ahead of Dillard and Petitfrere.
Let's go to T-Mac on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. T-Mac, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Okay, I have concrete proof that the Titans are going to win more games than last year. Here's how. How many games last year do you guys think that Will Levis lost the Titans alone? That's my first question.
At least two, maybe three?
You could start with the first two games.
Yes.
Yeah.
You could argue that he directly handed the game.
Three.
The Bengals game, maybe,
handed
him. There's three.
Yep.
Just
and
with
then,
direct plays.
And how many games do you think the offensive line lost the Titans alone?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the offense couldn't.
There were times where they couldn't block plays, right? They couldn't protect.
Obviously, because I don't think he was able to run the offense the way
T-Mac.
He wanted it to. Sorry about that, T-Mac. Thank you for the call. But what T-Mac was alluding to is this, and I think we have talked about this leading up to the draft and then after the draft, you know, will Cam be the starter? So we've discussed this. How many games, looking at this, because we also talked about there were majority of their games, they were either within a touchdown or leading at half. And then the second half, they just completely blew it. That's a team that has no depth. That's a team that roster is not as deep. They have talent, but it's not enough to sustain four quarters. And then you throw in the play of the quarterback. The offensive line wasn't that good. You know, you do look at the next following season and say, well, man, we got a new quarterback. It can't be as bad as it was last year, because last year alone, the quarterback threw away three games. The offensive line, you know, didn't allow the offensive play caller to call the plays that he really wanted to call. And his team, as bad as they were, there were a lot of games they were up at half or down by less than a touchdown. So I understand, you know, a fan like T-Mac, you know, feeling optimistic, because you don't have those players some of those players that were a part of the losing last year, they're not in prominent roles anymore. The two tackles, the tackle, you swap one, put it on the other side. Now that left or right tackle is gone. You put a better, what you assume is a better right tackle. Then you add a better left tackle. You add a guard. So you have changed the framework, or you have changed the look of your offensive line. That alone, judging by the guys that you have, you expect this team to be better. You don't expect the quarterback to throw away three or four games like they did last year.
And ESPN, I suppose, sees the same things that Albert Breer sees, that Derek was just describing, because one ESPN analyst rated the Titans' offensive line much higher than I anticipated. And we'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Your thoughts on the makeup of the Titans' offensive line. Albert Breer describes it as a quote-unquote professional offensive line. Your thoughts on the makeup of the offensive line this coming season for the Tennessee Titans, 615-737-1025. This September, Tim McGraw will be performing at Trinetics' Rock the Cradle in Nashville, a meaningful event supporting newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. Get your tickets now at rockthecradlenashville.org.
He's sitting there at left guard, which is a new position for him. He played left tackle in college. And he has nobody that he can rely on as an anchor physically and then mentally and from an experience standpoint next to him on at left tackle, and the same thing next to him on the other side at center. And so he's trying to help those guys when he's a rookie trying to figure out a new position. And, you know, it took him a while to kind of figure out how to play his position. And down the stretch last year, I think he did a really good job. I think he improved. And I think now that he has got a legitimate, bona fide, experienced, talented left tackle in Dan Moore, and when Cushenberry comes back from injury, he'll have the same thing at center. And all of a sudden, he won't have to be the guy that's going to hold up three positions. He'll have to hold up his position, and he'll have plenty of help on both sides for the first time in his career. So I'm very interested to see how he performs in that scenario.
That was Trevor Maddich on our program earlier this week discussing Peter Skoronski. And as I said at the end of our show yesterday, guys, I am bullish on Peter Skoronski.
So is Trevor.
I think he is going to have a really good season. I liked what I saw from him down the stretch of last season. The data backs that up. And I agree with Trevor. Now that Peter Skoronski, will be surrounded, to borrow the term Albert Breer used, he will be surrounded by professional offensive linemen and not Nicholas Petit-Frere and Aaron Brewer and other players. I think Peter Skoronski could do incredibly well. Now, does that mean that he's going to live up to his draft position? Probably not, but hopefully this season can be the first in a long line of good seasons for Peter Skoronski. So ESPN today, Mike Clay, who, if I recall correctly, specializes in fantasy football, he released his rankings of every major position group in the NFL. And he had the Titans offensive line ranked fifth best in the NFL behind the Eagles, Broncos, Bears, and Vikings. Now, I could not find his methodology, how he came up with this number. I looked at last year's rankings, and Mike Clay had the Titans offensive line ranked ninth. So perhaps take
ninth.
This. Yes.
In the league?
Yes, before the season.
Oh, so, before the season.
Before
Must
the
be
season.
A big believer in Bill Callahan.
So perhaps take this with a grain of salt. Back in July, Pro Football Focus had the Titans offensive line ranked 24th, which seems more appropriate.
Right, and I think we would agree. Fifth is probably a little bit optimistic. Ninth, I don't know what he was thinking. I would like to know. But I want to go back to Trevor, because I think he made a couple points that I had not really given a whole lot of thought to. And that is, first of all, let's remember that Peter Skoronski just turned 24. And I always put the age in perspective. Cam Ward, who has not played an NFL game yet, is 23. So Peter Skoronski came into the league young. Mm-hmm. This is his third year. So he's got experience under his belt, and he's still developing. J.C. Latham is only 22. So there's a lot of room for growth with both of these guys, and I think Skoronski has improved. But the thing that really jumped out at me, D-Mace, about what Trevor said was that, because this is what I had never thought of. When you go from tackle to guard, he spent his whole career up until he was drafted by the Titans as a tackle. Mm-hmm. And he's used to blocking, mostly, the quick rush ends, the ones that can really get around and make moves on you. Then he moves inside, and he's trying to block, I forget the term that Trevor used, but he had a funny name for the big interior defensive line. But, you know, the nose guards and the defensive tackles mm-hmm. that are much more big. It's a different style of blocking. And that's an adjustment, even though you're theoretically, everybody says, well, you're going to an easier position. It should be easy. But it's an adjustment, right? And so I think that that is also something that he should be much more comfortable with now. And he's, as we heard on the clip, he's now surrounded on either side by better players.
Yeah, you tend to believe that, you know, the better the players are around him, the better the individual gets that's in the middle of it. You drafted him high for a reason. You felt he had the skill set to play the position you wanted him to play. But unfortunately for him, he was booking, you know, with two guys that really shouldn't have been starters in this league. Let's just say that. I'm not going to go all the way to saying he's trash again, but they were not starters. Brewer wasn't a starter because he was too small. And Dillard wasn't a starter because he just wasn't good.
And then he had the appendectomy.
Exactly. Then he had the appendectomy.
Yeah.
And it affects him. But I think after that, last year he started to come around. You got to understand, he was in his second offense at that point. He's in his second offense because he didn't get drafted by Bill Callahan and Brian Callahan. He got drafted by Mike Vrabel and his staff. So you go from that offense to a different offense. And by the way, the two guys on either left or the right of you, you know, the first year were not good. Then the second year, you got to change a new offense. And then you're putting a left tackle at a position that, you know, he's okay. But now you got a rookie next to a second year player. And then your center, he gets hurt. And now you're dealing with the backup center last year. So there were a lot of things going on around Peter. But he still managed to get better. And if you watch him now, again, like I said yesterday, I think he is right now, he's proven he is the best interior lineman the Titans have on their roster at this point. Zeitler hadn't practiced yet as much. So we know once he get in there, and that's what I'm worried about too with Zeitler, and I can talk about that later. But when Zeitler comes back and Cushenberry is cementing in again as your starter at center, but whether it's he or Levin, I think Levin is doing a good job. I think you're going to see a much better offensive line than what you've seen the past three seasons.
So Pro Football Focus recently wrote an article predicting the NFL's most improved player at every position. Peter Skoronski was the choice at guard. And here are the data points that I want to highlight for Skoronski. Quote, Skoronski took real steps forward as a pass blocker in the second half of the season, demonstrating the excellent footwork and hand usage that saw him drafted in the top 15 more consistently. His season-long 76.3 pass blocking grade was seventh at the position, but Skoronski dominated in the final seven games of the season, allowing just one sack and five pressures, while earning a league-high 88.2 pass blocking grade. And that's why I'm bullish on Peter Skoronski, because he ended the season on a high note, and now he is being surrounded by a professional left tackle in Dan Moore, a professional center in Lloyd Cushenberry.
Or Levin.
More so Cushenberry.
Yes.
But I liked what Trevor said there in that clip we played from when we spoke to him earlier this week, that now Skoronski only has to focus on his position. He's not trying to do the work of three men in one.
Yes, and hopefully Latham, as you do the dominoes, will, you know, just going in, just with having a heartbeat is light years an upgrade of the guys they were playing at right tackle last year. I mean, it wasn't just Nicholas Petit-Frere. Let's remember that. They tried everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So Latham goes over there, and I think he held his own for most of the season. What the rap on Latham was, and I don't know if you have the grades, because he The word was he wore down at the end of the season last year. He was holding his own for a while, but dipped a little bit towards the end of the year. I don't know if the weight was the thing. But as he slides over to the right, even if he's not great, he's way better than what was there. And this is a first-round pick who is slimmed down. He's got tools. I think he could be excellent there. So that's the idea, right?
Well, yeah, you got everybody, what it seems to be at this point, everybody in their right positions. I think first and foremost, that's where it needs to start. Because even though JC could play left tackle, and, you know, he had his ups and downs at left tackle, but I thought he was getting a little bit better. But now he's put in his original position. I think the position he can dominate at, and that's right tackle. So now you got a guy that is supposed to be play right tackle, he's playing right tackle. A guy that has played right guard for 10-plus years in his league, and he's been damn good at it, you got him at right guard. You're going to get your center back, and now the guy that you drafted to be your left guard, he's your left guard along with a bona fide left tackle. That should make the line much better because no one seems to be playing out of position now.
Let's go to Clay on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Clay, thank you for waiting. Go ahead.
I'm becoming a regular caller, boys. I just have a general comment, and then I wanted to ask D. Mace a question. You know, I'm out in the streets a lot of Nashville as a driver. And, Derek, you probably remember this. When you played back in the day and the team was good, I mean, you saw Titans flags everywhere on cars. You don't see that anymore. And that's really sad to me. I mean, I want this team to be good again. And the roster, you know, does need to be improved, and maybe even the coaching needs to be improved. But I just kind of wanted to say that you know, I noticed the difference in what it was back then and what it is now. Mm-hmm. Derek, I wanted your take on, after all, you played. I wanted your take. What do you think of Tony Pollard as a running back? I mean, I think the kid is pretty good. I like the Cowboys, too, and he was with the Cowboys. To me, he's a guy that's pretty shifty. He's got pretty good speed. He catches the ball pretty well out of the backfield. I mean, I think he's a pretty good player, don't you?
Thanks, Clay.
Thank you, Clay. Yeah, I think Tony Pollard's a good player, but I think Tony Pollard operates better when he doesn't have to take a boatload of the carries.
Which might be a problem
now that Tajay Spears is hurt again. Exactly. And not to say that Tony Pollard couldn't do it, because I think he can. But if you want to get the best out of Tony Pollard, then, you know, he may not carry the ball 260 times next year, this upcoming season. As it looks now, I mean, he may have to carry it 260, 300 plus. But I think if he has to do that, you're not going to get the best Tony Pollard. I would rather have him 200 carries, and he still may get 1,000 yards. But what I'm hoping, that if I get it down to 200 carries, that 4.2 average he had last year will go up. Because if you look at his career, when he wasn't carrying the ball the bulk of the time, his average per carry was up. They need to get him back. That's why they put so much emphasis on Tajay Spears and that skill set that he has, because it allows them to get Tony Pollard off the field, give him a break, take some snaps away from him, because they know come the fourth quarter, he is a strong, powerful runner to be in a small, you know, a small body, but he still runs like a big running back. So if they can take away some of the carries, but then he be the guy in the fourth quarter, the last 4 or 5 minutes of the game that you need a strong running back. If they can do that, I think you're going to get the best Tony Pollard. But if he has to rush 260, 300 times, no, you're not. You're just not going to get the best Tony Pollard.
That's what we're going to be looking for tonight, is the running backs not named Tony Pollard. Mm-hmm. This is a chance to make a step forward. Everybody's going to be watching that tonight, in addition to Ward. You mentioned the run-blocking problems of the offensive line, so let's tie it back to, we think there's going to be an upgrade in offensive line play. That will help Tony Pollard. He had 1,000 yards last year, but a lot of the analytics showed that he had to do a lot after contact. He was, you know, his yards after contact graded well, which tells you if you can just give him a little more space, he could be that much more effective. But I agree with you. He needs a partner. He needs a tandem running back.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on the Tennessee Titans offensive line. The Titans are back in action tonight at 6 o'clock against the Atlanta Falcons. So right after our program, you can listen right up to kickoff with us here on 102.5 The Game. Coming up next, the University of Tennessee made an announcement recently that represents the next arms race in college sports. We discuss that next. Chad Withrow will join us at 4:20. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. 102.5 The Game.